Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. This week, we're talking about how to save while paying off debt, where to invest your money, and we're taking a listener question about what to do after you have your emergency fund built. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and let's get talking. We're going to try something brand new and exciting in today's episode. We're going to bring the money talking points that you know and love directly to our guests. You're going to hear us have that simple and open money talk about the talking points that you can take to your friends and family in order to get a conversation started about today's episode. I know that this is going to be awesome, and I'm excited to hear a basic money talk between a few people to give you an example of why these money talks can be so useful. And since this is my first time doing it, please let me know what you think. If you'd rather we go back to solo money talking points, let me know. But we can always move things around, so leave a comment on Spotify or send me an email about what you're interested in. But I did want to announce that I'm going to keep doing a lot more guest episodes. I realize that you all like those a lot more through the listener stats and everything, so we may have a bonus solo episode every now and then. But for now, you can expect a weekly guest episode, and let me know what you think. One more update that I wanted to provide for each and every one of you listening is just the quick heads up that you may start to hear some ads at the beginning and end of the episodes. I'm not sure if we're going to put them in the middle yet, so you don't have to worry about that right now, but I wanted to let you know about this just to give you a heads up that you may start hearing some ads on the podcast, and this is going to be really great towards helping support the show and keep the show going and paying some of the basic costs for hosting and editing and things like that. But of course, thank you so much to each and every one of you for listening. I truly do appreciate it. If you ever have any comments or questions or feedback, please send them my way on my website. This week, we're going to be talking about saving money. And there's a lot more that goes into it than just putting your money into your credit union or your bank. How do you balance those competing priorities like debt? How do you decide whether to pay debt off or not? How do you juggle so many things at once? And let's not forget about the scary paycheck to paycheck cycle that we also desperately want to avoid or get out of. And today's interview is going to be a great one with two guests. So let's get this train rolling. Today's money buddies are Steve and Mark. Steve is a retired corporate executive with nearly 30 years in the travel industry, leading multi-billion dollar divisions and building high performing teams. Today, he's focused on a passion project, helping the next generation build real wealth through simple, practical financial guidance. He's the co-author of The Simple Road Towards Financial Freedom, which is an Amazon bestseller. Mark is a seasoned financial advisor with decades of experience guiding clients through all stages of life. He specializes in simplifying complex financial decisions and creating actionable paths. Mark also co-authored The Simple Road Towards Financial Freedom to help young adults gain confidence with the tools that they need to build long-term wealth. The money talking points for today's episode are: how are you saving your money? 2. Where do you like to invest? And 3. Have you ever been paycheck to paycheck? With those money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Mark and Steve to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having us on, Skylar.
Thanks, Skylar.
Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation. I'm always excited when I get two guests at once because it's kind of a, I guess, buy one, get one free for those listening. We get to talk and have a kind of roundtable conversation when there's multiple of us. They're a little bit more fun. I mentioned in the introduction that we're changing this one up a little bit. Longtime listeners have heard me talk about the money talking points at the end on my own, and I decided I want to hear some more of what others have to say about that. So we're going to kick it off today with the money talking points. Just a reminder, these are great talking points for you to share with a friend or a family member and say, hey, I listened to this episode, and one of the things they talked about was saving money. And the first one we're going to start out here with is, how are you saving money? So that's what you could ask or post to your family or friends is, how do you go about saving money? Let's start it off. Mark, I'll start with you. How do you save money?
You know, we talk about this in the book, and we want to make it as easy as possible for people to save within their budgets. And we really started with flipping the script on a traditional model of budgeting, which was the 50-30-20. 50% of what you earn goes to your basic needs, 30% for your wants in life, and then 20% you save. So we're putting the 20% above the 30%, so 50, 20, 30. So the goal here is that before your joys of life, the 30%, you find a way to save 20%. And that 20%, Skylar, can come from your back pocket, but also you look at 20%, part of that could come from your match from your retirement account. So if your employer has a match, that helps get you to that 20%. The takeaway is that if you look at yourself as a business and every dollar of revenue that comes in, you automatically think to yourself, I got to take a percentage and put it away for savings, short-term, midterm, or long-term savings to get that 20%. And then we like to focus on is that you do that hard work. We're not saying you eat ramen the rest of your life, but what we're saying then you still got the 30% for all the wants we want to splurge on.
What's wrong with ramen?
I like ramen, but maybe it's because I'm still young and can enjoy it, and I haven't tried the nicer things in life.
Yeah.
Steve, how does flipping that help you save?
Automation is the big key that we really stress, and the more that you can keep it out of sight, out of mind, the better off you are. So just, again, tagging on to Mark's on the 20%, that if you've got, say, 6% of it coming out of your work 401k, and then all of a sudden, say, your company might match the 6%, the numbers might vary a little bit. Mm-hmm. There you're talking 12% is already covered right there. That's all automated, obviously, through a employee plan. And then figuring out whatever that remainder is that you want to put away, automate it. And that's what we talk about. Open up an account where on the first of the month or the 15th, that money just comes right out. And then you've hit your 20% and everything else should go to your needs and wants. We also do talk about sometimes 20% is not achievable, maybe when you're starting out because of certain commitments you've already got. So maybe it's 10% or 15%, but start small and build momentum from there. Once you start managing your funds and seeing the successes that come from that, it gets you kind of excited to sort of up that number from 10% to 12% or to 15%. You get momentum going.
The bigger thing is the behavioral foundation you're building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, 20% is the goal, or maybe you want to push it to 25 if you're crazy. Whatever that goal is, starting at 10 or 12 is going to make it a whole lot easier to go up 8% or 5% instead of just going up 20%. If you're like, I need to pay off all my debt first and then I'll start investing, it is much harder to go from $0 being saved or invested to $1,000 a month. That is such a hard switch to flip.
Yep.
And now I hope all the listeners are thinking, oh, wow, there's a method I haven't thought about before with saving. And now I'm going to go try that. That's the whole point with these money talking points, is to just hear different perspectives. Maybe you have a family member that says, I save exclusively through automation like you guys suggested, but it's all through their direct deposit. And you're like, I never thought about using my direct deposit form in that way to just set up those percentages and never think about it. So there's a lot of different ideas out there.
Yeah, that's a great one. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the 201 version of the saving. But yeah, where you could set it up, payroll deduction. I did this when I was working, where all of a sudden you just set it up through your payroll and part of your paycheck goes to your savings account. And it's just like, it never makes it into your checking account to have it pulled out on the 15th or whatever day you set up.
And you likely never even spend it or notice it because your lifestyle is now adjusted to that new percentage that you're getting. So you begin to think, oh, I actually only get paid 80% of my salary and the rest is just working in the background and you never think about it. And then suddenly 10, 15 years later, it's grown or whatever you have it doing. But that leads us to kind of this correlation between saving and investing. Once you start to get to a point where saving is investing and they kind of become synonymous, it can be a really valuable point. Mark, I'd love to hear you kick us off with where do you invest? How do we bring up this conversation and talk about it?
Great question. That goes back to when Steve and I first met years ago when our boys were in the same fraternity together and we had dad's weekend. Steve would be the ideal prospect as a fiduciary financial advisor, somebody that that have done well, they've saved enough, and we talk about money topics. Ideally, you would think I was, trying to recruit Steve as a client, I was, but once I realized that Steve is very astute on investment knowledge, I did say to him that if he's paying an advisor, he could probably save some money and do it himself. And so the reason why I bring that up is we wrote the book to get people on the simple road towards financial freedom. And we've got guidelines set up that you don't need a financial professional to get started. Maybe when things get a little more complicated down the road. So by just opening a brokerage account, we've got a step-by-step process on how do you do that. But open up a brokerage account and getting allocated. And of course, everybody's risk tolerance is a little bit different. Understanding what you're investing in and looking at the history of the market. You look at an S&P 500. So that's about 500, 502 companies, some of the largest companies on the New York Stock Exchange. And so you look at broad-based diversification. A lot of our listeners know that on a daily basis, you see the S&P 500, you see the Dow, which the Dow is the largest 30 companies. I think a lot of times people get a little hesitant on investing in the market because they feel like they could possibly lose money. And there's times where the markets obviously go down on a daily basis and they are up as well. But understanding what you're invested in, and the book kind of goes into those principles, because we don't get hung up on what you actually invest in. I'm super like, well, I don't want to get started because I don't want to invest in the stock market. That's completely fine. There's other ways to put money into savings accounts, CDs, and some other alternatives that maybe people feel more comfortable. So we encourage people not to let that be a hindrance. Maybe just start the process. And as your account builds up, then do some more research with our book and get an idea of what options are out there that you can actually invest in to potentially grow this. A lot of people look, Steve did a phenomenal job. That's what brought us on to this conversation about education with his own children, about using that $1 million mark. What's it going to take to get to that $1 million? A lot of people like to look at that $1 million as a threshold. And when you look at the power of the market, what the market can do for you, you don't have to save $1 million to have $1 million.
No.
A lot of that,
thankfully,
will come. I think that's one thing that how Steve taught his children as a non-advisor led me to the conclusion that Steve could definitely do it on his own.
That's really interesting. If you're nervous to get started with the stock market and all these acronyms throw you for a loop, you don't know what a ticker symbol is, maybe just a simple CD or a dedicated savings account that's earning a slightly higher interest rate that maybe has some restrictions on it, so you can learn that, hey, I can't take this money out. That way, when you have it invested in the market, you say, I shouldn't take it out because maybe it's down. Like you said, you're not going to realize those losses, but you've at least trained a little bit to leave money in an account through a CD or something like that. I like that simple approach to just get started if you're a little nervous. Steve, how do you think that could be valuable if, like, let's say someone has $1,000 or $2,000 sitting in a 0.01% savings account and they're just terrified to put it into the S&P 500. How does something simple help them?
That's a great question. One that we hear when we do our presentations to Gen Z folks all the time. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we really stress, and especially in the book, is the bucketing system. It's something that we recommend, but really taking a step back and looking at what your budgets are and then looking at what your plans are in terms of, are you looking to buy a house in the next couple of years? But in quick summary of the bucketing system goes definitely more in depth in the book. One is for your near-term needs. So these are in, you know, 1 to 2 years from now. So this could be your, well, should be your emergency fund, things along those lines. And then we have recommendations in the book, but that's your CDs. Like you're talking about, hopefully you're getting more than 0.1%. You're definitely, your bank checking accounts are the ones that are definitely not going to give you the good returns, but your CDs, hopefully you're getting 4% or 5% currently. And then we talk about bucket two is 2 to 5 years. This could be, hey, I'm looking to buy a car. I'm looking to buy a house. I need a down payment. You can maybe have a little bit more risk because you've got a little bit more time if the market were to go down. And then bucket three are 5 years out into the future. Retirement plans, just money you're not going to touch for 5 years. They're afraid that their money that they put into the stock market is just, companies are going to go bankrupt. It's this big roll of the dice. We try to really frame what you're investing in to give them comfort. And so to Mark's point, you're investing in 500 of the biggest companies in the world. You're investing in Apple, you're investing in Google, you're investing in Meta, you're investing in all these companies. The chances of all 508 going bankrupt and your investment going to zero is basically non-existent. And so once you get that out in the open and they can understand it maybe a little bit more, okay, NVIDIA, Apple, you know, these companies have just been growing like crazy, probably for the next 5, 10, 20 years, 30 years, whenever I'm retiring, they're going to continue to grow. But trying to explain it in that way makes the comfort level go up considerably. Mm-hmm. And then also what we talk about is don't overthink your investments in the stock market. Everything we recommend in the book is going to be the stock market investments you're not touching for at least 5 years. So if the market goes down 20% today, don't worry about it. Yeah. I know it's not going to make you feel great, but if you're doing the regular investing, guess what? You're buying the exact same stocks that you were before, a little bit of Apple, a little bit of Google, but you're getting it 20% off. So you're actually getting a sale on it. Mm-hmm. And really the time to make sure that you're freaking out when the stock market goes down is when you're getting close to tapping into those funds. And in the book, we talk about there's certain moments where we call them STL moments, where you need to stop, talk, and listen to a professional. Mm-hmm. And toward retirement is one of those, because you definitely want to make sure you time that correctly when you pull out those funds. But really trying to just give the details of what people are investing in hopefully raises their comfort level to go, okay, maybe I don't need to put my retirement funds in a CD, which is a plan of attack, but probably won't get you to your numbers that you want as much as if you put it into a S&P 500.
Yeah, I love the picture you just painted there, and I hope that helps calm everyone down, because this podcast is focused towards the same audience as your book, those Gen Z, maybe younger millennials, people just getting started that are kind of wondering, what do I do with my money? And I'm sure, I don't know the exact numbers because my investing journey started not too long ago, but right now it's called the Magnificent Seven or whatever, right? Like those seven biggest companies. 10, 15 years ago, it was a different bundle of 5 or 10 companies that were at the top. And I'm sure there's been a company that's gone way up in the S&P 500 that doesn't exist anymore. And you know what? Everyone that was invested in the S&P 500 then is just fine because that company didn't take their portfolio all the way down. There's a lot that you can learn in some conversations around what is the market, what is an index fund. Those simple conversations can rest at ease a lot of people's minds and can make sure a lot of people are a heck of a lot calmer. But I do have a third money talking point here. I want to get into the interview and talk more about saving money. So I'm going to float this money talking point out for the audience, for them to go have a talk and come report back to me about what they learned. Everyone listening, have you ever been paycheck to paycheck? And this can bring about some really exciting discussions and some really interesting points of how they got out of it or why living paycheck to paycheck can be so difficult. But I'm going to save that money talking point for the audience because I want to get to helping people more with savings. Steve, I'll have you start off. There's so many competing priorities in our lives. People say, I'm not going to save. I'm not going to save anything until my debt's paid off. And it's hard to go from that 0 to 100% on investing or saving. When there's so many different competing priorities, how can I still possibly save money?
That first step, like we talked about, is critical. And then as we talk about in the book, we have an example of Pat. Pat, it does not have a high salary, you know, is not making a six-figure income, but Pat makes $50,000 a year, sets aside 20% of his or her salary and accumulates basically $1 million after 20 years just by doing some of the things that we talk about. One of the things we talk about is the free money that's out there. So at a minimum, you've got to make sure that you're taking advantage of your company's 401k match. Not everybody has this, but many do. You know, if your company gives 3% or 4% or 5%, at a minimum, you really need to make sure you take advantage of that, because that's just free money that's out there. And then as you go through the details, but it's really something you need to do just to get a handle on how much income are you bringing in and where are your expenses going in terms of needs versus wants and all that, to give you a snapshot of where you are. It's really your financial compass. And being able to lay out what you could do and where you can take that first step, because debt is something you want to pay off. You want to probably get into the details in terms of what has highest interest rates that you're paying, but at a minimum, you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of the match. And remember, whenever you're putting this money aside, you're putting it aside for yourself. You're not putting it aside for anybody else. And we suggest doing it earlier than later, is the small amounts of investments you make, if you can do them super early, turn into these huge amounts of money into the future. And so that's where the more that you can put aside to let it grow 20 years, 30 years, things along those, are going to be thanking your future self for that.
Yeah. And if I could, I wish I need a counter on my website that says number of times the company match has been mentioned, because this is going to be episode 194. And I think it's been mentioned 190 times on the show. Like, it is way up there. It's easily the most important thing that everyone mentions.
I'm going to throw another one out there. You probably didn't mention as often, but it's something that's a little bit newer. The HSA funds, the health savings accounts. A lot of times the health savings accounts, you will have your company will contribute to the health savings account too.
Yeah. My wife and I love the HSA. We have ours for years, and maybe your company offers an HSA match. My last one did. And that's a secret wonder weapon of investment planning and savings. If you can get those matches and get them in tax advantaged accounts like the HSA, it's fantastic. Mark, I want to jump to you with these competing priorities. One that I often hear is student loans, maybe high interest rate, maybe some from years ago, and they're not super high interest rate. Can you help guide us through that thought process? Is there a percentage where you start to think about put more towards debt, saving? How do you kind of juggle that one?
Yeah, I think it's good to prioritize your debt. And so if you've got, and usually by what you owe on it, the balance is one thing, but also the percentage of interest you're paying. So if you have a student loan debt that's at 7.5%, 8%, for example, and you owe $10,000, but you also have a credit card that's $1,000 and you owe 17% interest on it, it may be wise to target the credit card first. And then it becomes a balancing act between student loans and savings. We've been spoiled for many years of having such low interest rates that historically right now, interest rates are about average. When you look at people are able to finance homes in the 2% area not too long ago, it was great. So then it's like, okay, where are we going to come up with this game plan to pay down some of this debt and also save? So one of the things that I have a weekly habit. Whenever the 15th of the month falls on that Monday of that week, I go through my reoccurring charges on my credit cards and make sure that there's not something I'm missing. There was a subscription I temporarily signed up for about 4 weeks ago, and I didn't realize to shut it off. And it was going to be another $4.95. So I knew I was paying it for the first month, but you have to go in there and manually shut those things off. How many reoccurring things do we have that we just pay off our credit cards or it adds to it that we don't? And so that's, if I didn't have that process in place, I would have, on the 17th, I think it was going to be, another $4 taken out for the subscription that I was just signing up for the first month. So there's ways that we can save money to use that money to pay down the debt. It's hard when you pay down a student loan debt. That's great. But if you have an unexpected expense, now you don't have any liquidity to help with that, like tires on a car. It's good to have some of that liquid savings as well. So it really becomes a balancing act. But very few times do I ever see it advantageous to let credit cards go by. And
yeah,
but also it's, you know, the next purchase you make is probably the most critical thing to worry about, because the past is history. And so not repeating the pattern is probably the key thing. And how it is influence us to buy things. If you step back as a consumer, like, okay, I don't want to be a victim. I don't really need this. I'm going to practice some delayed gratification, which we talk about in the book, because the next purchase that I make that I really don't need something is taking me further away from my goal. If you don't have a goal, you have no reason to change your behavior. Well, I think that's something we talk about a lot in the book, not only setting a goal, but actually visualizing the goal and making sure every decision you make is getting you closer to your goal, not further away.
Yeah, I love what you said there about credit cards, especially, because so often it can be like, well, I have this low mortgage rate and low student loan rate, and they're just forgetting about this 18, 25%. My wife and I just signed up for a credit card to get a sign-up bonus. We're big in the travel hacking space right now, and I think the interest rate on it was like 25.99%, and it's a $30,000 limit. If you had $30,000 in debt at 25% interest rate, that's nuts. That's where you need to focus on paying it off. So you need to pay attention to those interest rates, and don't forget about those ones that maybe it's not a high balance. Maybe it is just $1,000 or $2,000, but it's at 18, 19, 20%. And it just keeps never seeming to go away. And you mentioned, oh, you might hear $4.95 for a subscription. You think that's not that much money, like $5, who cares, right? But it's when you have 20 of those, or when you have just a few of them and you never remember to shut them off, and it just keeps going. And now just think, what could that $5 help you get started with going into a monthly brokerage account? And yes, it's only $5. So is it going to do wonders for your retirement? No, but is it going to help build that habit and build that behavioral piece that's so key to increasing that amount? Yes. So it's all about finding those little wins. And that can be a huge stepping stone to say, hey, I learned how to shut off all these subscriptions and I switched it over to an automatic brokerage contribution, and now we're doing a lot better. Our credit card bill every month's a little bit less, and it's actually going away because we're focusing on paying it off. So just simple small steps and noticing those things can be a huge deal.
Can I add something? Because I think it's a great precursor for it. We kind of lay out priorities to your question, Skylar, in turn. What I was going to say on the $5 a month example that you guys are talking about, it's sort of a precursor to one of the chapters in our book, which is it's only $400 a month. So there's these concepts that are out there that you can go get a car and you're like, ah, it's $400 a month. We try to push the audience to think long and hard about these gifts that keep on giving. The apps are a great example. The apps you can cancel at any point. Your car payment is not that option. You know, you can you can go if you're paying that for, it's only $400 a month, but it might be 6 years, it might be 5 years, it might be whatever it is. And then you sort of forget about it. It's baked into your budget. And then 6 months from now, another thing comes up and you're like, it's only $200 a month, but really you just keep snowballing these things on top of each other exactly with these monthly recurring payments. Make sure you're thinking about how it impacts you 3, 4, 5 years into the future versus what your current situation is now. And if you can get a, if you cannot enter into those types of things, you're probably going to be thanking yourself a few years down the line.
It's just $5 a month. So I always think about the $5 value meal. What that adds up to over time. So just as a general rule, not to get specifics on averaging the returns of the stock market, but if we were looking at the averaging of the stock market, $5 a month for 20 years is $4,000. $500 a month is $400,000 in 20 years. So think about that. Even at the $5 a month, that's $4,000 in 20 years. And so if you did just the $500 a month, almost $500,000 a year. And it's amazing. Sometimes I think people focus too much on the big things, but it's the little things that you're spending money on that add up, but also the little habits.
Yeah, the habits are huge.
And that's one of the reasons why we named the book Toward Your Financial Freedom. It's whatever your financial freedom is and defining that because everyone finds freedom, especially when it comes to finances, a little bit different.
I love the habit thing there because it just feels a little lame to tell people, oh, you can't buy the soda or the coffee or whatever that you want when it's only a few bucks. But really, if you don't have the habits in place beforehand to be intentionally making these decisions, you should stop doing that and realize that you need to realign some of those priorities. If you have that $500 a month or $1,000 a month going into a retirement setup or however you have it set up to be invested, then sure, maybe that $3, $4, $5 coffee or whatever isn't the biggest deal, or that subscription isn't the biggest like way down on your finances because you have those other habits built up and you're avoiding things that are not letting you get anywhere.
The beauty of the 50-20-30 model is exactly that. You make the decision on where you want those funds to go. For some people, $5 on a drink gives them their happiness scale is really high versus other things. $5 isn't quite as impactful. If you want to give it to charity, great. If you want to give it to going out or going on trips, you can sort of spend it however you want. Let's just say you like ramen. Okay, well then you can eat ramen, spend money on something else. We try to really stress in the book, you can still be very successful financially and set yourself up with the financial freedom in the future and still enjoy your lifestyle. But it just has to have a little bit of management guardrails as you look at what your budgeting is and all that.
Yeah, we're not ones to say you should not have fancy drinks. If you have a reward system in place that you're doing the heavy lifting, doing the little things, and you should be able to reward yourself with what you want. We call them life's trade-off decisions. That by spending money on this, you're going to have as much here. But if you're comfortable that your choices so far have gotten you closer to your financial freedom, then you should, by all means, enjoy life. Absolutely. And I think I would say most people, when they know they're on the right financial path, enjoy those luxuries even more. Because they've got a game plan.
You truly enjoy it. You know it's not weighing down your finances. It's not adding to that credit card debt. And I was going to ask you guys the questions. How do we still have fun with money while we're trying to stay afloat? But you guys both just answered it perfectly. So if you're wondering the answer to that, go back maybe 5-10 minutes and listen to that part over again and share it with a friend. That's such a hard point is you want to say, I want to save money. I want to enjoy these expenses that I'm having, but how do I still have fun setting up these buckets, that 50, 30, 20, and adjusting it so that things are in the right order? That can be a huge way to set up some intentionality. That's kind of like the vocab word of the year for my wife and I is being intentional with our money so that we can still enjoy those other things that we want to enjoy. But you were also, Steve, alluding to the paycheck to paycheck cycle and how emergency funds can be important. Having some liquid cash can be a big deal. If someone is just getting started and maybe they're in a valuable spot where they are not paycheck to paycheck yet, how do you suggest they potentially avoid that to never really have to deal with that big stressor?
Having the game plan is just the what we've seen time and time again, especially as we talk to audiences, is a lot of times people are living paycheck to paycheck because they don't know the tools that we talk about in the book, you know, setting up a budget, doing the 50-20-30 model, all that. And so without knowing any different, you just sort of, you know, money comes in and you're like, great, I've got money to think. And so I think having that game plan really helps. The thing we talk about too with the emergency fund is a lot of times we hear that, I don't know if I'm ever going to need it. You know, why would I need an emergency fund? Yeah. I don't think this is going to happen. But we've seen time and time again, we've heard from readers, we've got reviews on our Amazon. People have said, thank you for, you know, giving me some of these concepts because I wasn't planning on it. The belt on my car broke and now I need to go repair it. And I don't have to cash out my 401k and take penalties, all that type of stuff. I can actually just use this emergency fund. And then guess what? I'll replenish that emergency fund. That emergency fund is such a key component.
Yeah. Mark, have you ever had to use an emergency fund before?
For sure.
Oh, how did it help you, or how did it relieve the stress?
What helped me is going through the pain of not having one. And back when I first graduated from college, then I quickly realized that probably my car payment should not be more than my house payment. And I had to think to myself, wow, I don't want to get rid of this car. So if I drive it for 10 years, then it actually works itself out from the numbers. But going through the humble experience of my mid-20s, early 20s, counting change, literally trying to find change, I thought to myself, this is never going to happen again. This is never going to happen again. And so you change the behavior. Sometimes running from pain is more efficient than trying to strive for something that you don't want to experience that pain again. So you go away from it. That was my experience because I was raised in a family of business owners and you just work hard and money things were not even discussed. So that's why we shifted the gears to make sure that my children are raised with some other principles that we, Steve and I had discussed earlier as well. And that's another thing too, when I go back to the power of doing little things. And so Steve and I, this is a passion project for us. It came about out of a great conversation about that there's not enough of these financial help books. We've never written a book before, but I think what we're going to need to do, and we did it, we're going to spend about two and a half hours every Monday and just dedicated towards the book. Not 10 minutes here or 20 minutes there, but every Monday for a little bit over 2 years, and the book was born. We're not authors, but we did have the focus and the time commitment to focus on that just a little bit every week. It's amazing what we can do in just 2.5 years.
A plan. Yeah.
A plan.
Yeah, a plan and a system. I love the relationship there that kind of that painted in my mind where you guys are instructing people set up these systems, right? So that you, maybe you are not an investor right now. You don't identify yourself as someone who can save money. You two didn't identify yourselves as authors, yet every Monday for years, you set some time aside. You put a system in place. And someone right now is saying, I don't save money. I'm a spender, right? They've self-identified as that, and that's all they'll ever be in their mind. But what if they set 1 hour every Sunday to review their expenses for the last week? Suddenly they're starting to shift and there's a system in place. So you guys took on something that maybe you weren't perfect at. You knew money, you knew how to handle money, so you knew how to teach it, but you didn't know how to write a book. So you kind of used the systems you're teaching in just a different avenue of life. And it can help us in so many ways, even in other areas. If you didn't want to, maybe you're good with money. You're listening to this saying, yeah, guys, I agree with everything you're saying. Even just take that system idea and apply it to a different area of your life and use it to grow and do better. So I love that.
I think also knowing your limitations. Example is just, I'll just pick on Steve. Steve knows how to work out. He does it very regularly. He's got a system. He does it himself. I, on the other hand, I need somebody to hold me accountable and have a trainer. And so not everybody needs a trainer. And some people can do it yourselves. But once you get to a point that you're like, you know what? I need to get some advice. Then by all means, get some advice. But the book will show you ways to get started. And when life gets a little more complicated, you may need to get some other advice. But I always tailor it towards working out. It's the little things every day. I mean, if everyone would go to the gym on January 1st and January 2nd, everyone was in shape. But it's just a little bit of exercise every day, the little bit of savings. And eventually, if you start with nothing in savings, you wake up one day, it's like, wow, I have $1,000. I have $2,000. And that momentum builds up. And that's why we cannot stress any more than just get started.
That's fantastic.
If I can tag onto that too, I was going to say that the analogy that I like to use is driving. So I knew how to drive. My kids turned 16. I needed to teach somebody how to drive. And I wasn't, that wasn't in my background. So what steps do you take? What comes first? All that type of stuff. And that was a mantra for us with this book. How do we make it simple? And then how can it also be a guide for somebody teaching somebody else? So maybe I am teaching my son or daughter that's a Gen Z, but I don't know anything about investing or I know enough on the surface, they can really use this book as a guide to kind of go through and understand it. And as we talk about time and time again, just start small. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see, going back to the emergency fund, maybe this is a perfect tangible example. They needed to go to the emergency room. And if you've ever been, we've all been to the emergency room, you see what your insurance bill, especially if you have an HSA, you know what that bill can be. Easy $1,000 right there. Well, guess what? You got the emergency fund. Comes right out. And that's something that would apply to anybody because none of us know, of course, when we're going to end up in an emergency room. But that's a great example of just having something set aside and then you don't have to worry about it. And you're like, you know what? I've got it. And then I can just backfill. Going back to a system or a plan or whatever you want to call it, just taking that first step is exciting. And then you can start seeing maybe 3 months from now, 6 months from now, when you start reviewing and you're like, oh my goodness, look at all this money I've accumulated. And it really hasn't been that painful. And then it just gets you more excited.
You don't have to learn options trading right now in order to start investing. You can just start small, start saving that $5 a month. And then eventually you're going to need to learn, oh, what is a high yield savings account? And then you learn what that is. Like, you don't need to learn everything that goes into saving and investing. You don't need to learn tax rates and withdrawal strategies and all that stuff right away. Like, just get some money in the account and get going, get yourself out of a paycheck to paycheck cycle with a basic savings and emergency fund and some liquid cash, but don't do it all at once and learn from others' mistakes. Mark shared that you felt the struggle of not having that cash buffer or your auto loan payment being too high. Listen to other people and what they say, and that that's a struggle and that's something that they wanted to avoid. And avoid it early if you can. Let's round out this discussion with a real life example here. We got a listener question from Marcus. He's from Denver. He shared with us that he's making about $60,000 a year. And he said, hi, I'm Marcus, and I've been listening to your show, and I finally built up an emergency fund. I have about $8,000 saved up, which feels amazing, which is a great job like we've been talking about. That cash is going to be great. But now he says he's stuck. Everyone says he should start investing. He says he has no idea how to take that leap. Does he just open a random investment account with some app? How much should he move from savings to investing? He's so terrified of losing the money that he's worked hard to save. What's that first step to investing without feeling like he's gambling? Especially when you start looking at the index approach we've been talking about. But Mark, maybe can you help paint a picture for him? How does he get started with this?
You know, the first thing I would have him look at, first of all, step back and, you know, get some education and realize with gambling, there's a winner and a loser. That's what's totally different versus investing. I would encourage him to take a company that he's familiar with. Just as an example, let's take on Amazon. I think everyone realizes that ain't what Amazon does. And they're a great tech company. They're a great shipping company. And so everyone probably uses Amazon. But go to Amazon and pull up their stock ticker for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And just look at the ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs. And just kind of get a feel that's the roller coaster the stock market's going to give you. So when you invest in the stock market, knowing that you're an investor in some of the best companies, I think a person needs to educate themselves first. I am going to put money in. I'm going to be an investor in a company. So if you buy Apple or if you buy Amazon or Nvidia or Google, you are now a part owner of that company. Mm-hmm. And take any of those individual companies and look at it over the last 5 years by simply just typing in Amazon stock, five-year history, whatever. Educate yourself. As far as how much... So first of all, whatever this person decides to allocate to the market to get a potentially a better return, you got to make sure that you're going to be committed for at least 2 years. You can always sell down the market if you want to, but give yourself a 2-year time horizon. And if you're less nervous, if you start with $500 of your savings to invest in something that's possibly going to earn you more money, then start there. But don't look at it on the short term. The stock market is extremely volatile, but history will show us over the long term, the investor is going to benefit for the most part. And so the reason why this listener, we're recommending like the S&P 500 index is you're spreading that $500 out over about 503 different companies for that diversification. But keep in mind, some of those stocks in that index are ones that we're all familiar with.
Maybe just to clarify, Mark, if it's Marcus's first time going into the market, maybe you might suggest put money in that he doesn't need for 5+ years. Because in 2 years, it could, in extremely volatile, we should describe that a little bit to what Mark was talking about. He may invest $500 and it may go down to $450, and then it might go up to $525. Mm-hmm. Then it could go down to $475, and it's not going from 500 to zero to 1,000. But over time, and to Mark's point, if you watch it, the $500 hopefully in 5 years from now has gone up on average, say 8 to 10% a year. Now that's what the average is going back over 50 years, and history doesn't always repeat itself, but yeah, sometimes it rhymes. And that is one that we want to, you know, it might go down a little bit, but then it go up. But if he continues to invest $500 again, if he has that mindset, like we talked about, that you're getting all these 500 companies at a, then you're in a great spot. I also wanted to mention this earlier, because you were talking about somebody like Marcus, but the reason we wrote this book is the vast majority of people like Marcus and like mm-hmm. others were never taught any of this stuff. And so yeah. that's why it's a passion project. To Mark's point, there's no books written on it, because a lot of people write books because they're trying to sell a product or for their company. And that's not what we did. This purely as a passion project. In fact, a portion of sales go to a charity by the name of Cancer for College, which provides need-based college scholarships to cancer survivors.
Cool.
But we're really trying to just get people need to understand, they don't know it just because they didn't miss class that day when people talked about it. It's just unfortunately not talked about mm-hmm. enough. And so that's why we're trying to make a difference here. And to your point, Skylar, how do we tell more and more people about it?
A lot of people, Skylar, do talk about gambling and the stock market as being similar. Mm-hmm. And you're investing in some of the best companies in the world. As an owner of those companies, you're an investor. And I believe most people, if they're invested in the market, to Steve's point, over the next 3 to 5 years, will become very much more at ease with that mindset mm-hmm. of being an investor and not a gambler.
Yeah, I love that. That's fantastic. And we're reaching our time here. Thank you both so much for joining. How can people connect with you? I will leave all the links in the show notes. You mentioned that you have a book out there called Simple Road Toward Financial Freedom. I'll make sure the link is in the show notes for anyone listening that wants to check that out. But the final question here, and we'll start with Mark, and then Steve will go to you. What's one thing you wish you would have known sooner about saving money?
It doesn't take much to start. It really doesn't. I think we all realize that. I believe having a game plan with your budget, no matter what the size of the savings is, the key is you're saving something mm-hmm. because you have a discipline. And once you get that discipline and you see the momentum of the account growing, it becomes addicting to the goal of saving money for the short term and long term.
Awesome. Steve?
Yeah, I'd say start early. We touched on the imaginary person, Pat, that saves 20% of a $50,000 a year job and in 20 years is a millionaire. The part that we didn't mention in that I think is the wow moment is the $1 million that Pat has accumulated. 25% of that was contributed by Pat. 75% of it, $750,000 of the $1 million mm-hmm. is free money. So that stock market returns, 401k matches, all that type of stuff that we talked about. So, I mean, if nothing else, that's a great, powerful example of why you want to start earlier, because you just need a small amount of contribution to have this big amount into the future. And then I don't think we answered Marcus's question where he should open an account. I think Mark and I would probably be in agreement, but any brokerage like a Charles Schwab, a Fidelity, a lot of those places are great places to start. Super easy to open up an account. You can actually buy shares generally for no fee at all. Those are probably a couple places that we would recommend.
I'll cover that right after this interview. I'll go in a little bit more in depth about some different account types. A Roth IRA could be potentially a good one for them. So I'll talk about that more after this interview. Mark, Steve, thank you so much for joining. This has been a fantastic conversation.
Thanks for having us on. We have on our social media that I know you're going to reference on there. Mm-hmm. Mostly it's all Simple Road Book. We have bite-sized financial clips that we're doing every week.
Cool.
So kind of a fun follow, at least this feedback that we get on it, in terms of like, we might take a concept from the book and spend 60 seconds on a concept. Super easy, bite size. We'd love people to follow us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for
thanks, Skylar.
Thanks, Skylar.
Thank you so much to Steve and Mark for coming on the podcast. I thought that was fantastic, and I really liked the change of putting the money talking points at the beginning of the interview. So let me know what you thought about that. And if you feel like we should keep it around or not, leave a comment on Spotify or YouTube or send me an email. And I'd love to interact with you about how we can adjust and make this Money Talk podcast exactly what you want to listen to. But there was one money talking point that we didn't get to, which was the third one. Have you ever been paycheck to paycheck? Well, thankfully, my wife and I, we have never been paycheck to paycheck, so I don't quite understand exactly what it entails or what it's like. So I would love to hear from each and every one of you listening if you've ever found yourself in a paycheck to paycheck situation, or maybe you currently find yourself in one. What is it like? How does it feel? What are the different decisions that you have to consider each and every day or each and every paycheck in order to keep going with your money? But this is a great money talking point that I would love to hear from each and every one of you on. So let me know in the comments on Spotify, have you ever lived paycheck to paycheck? But I wanted to wrap up with one question that Marcus asked that we didn't quite get to, which is, which account should Marcus use to invest? Well, he should probably start with an IRA if he doesn't have some sort of 401k available through work, or if he's never invested for his retirement. The IRA can be a great place to start. There's Roth versus traditional. And let me explain what those are real quick, even though we've covered it in past episodes. Let me explain what they are by walking you through the path of each dollar. So a traditional IRA, you would deposit money into it. That would be tax deductible, making your money pre-tax. It would make the money that you put into a traditional account before tax, which means it grows tax deferred. And then you pay taxes on the entire amount that you withdraw at the tax rate that you are at the time you withdraw it. Now, Roth, this money goes in after tax because it has already been taxed. So there's no tax deductions or anything for contributing to a Roth, but that money is taxed at the rate that you are currently being taxed at. And then that money grows tax-free, and then everything you withdraw has no taxes on it. Of course, an IRA can have potential penalties and fees for early withdrawal, so make sure to consider that, so that you don't think you can just get this money out whenever. Even though with a Roth IRA, you can take the contributions out at any time. That's a nice little quirk about it, but that's not necessarily something you want to do when this money is invested for your retirement. Now, there's also a taxable brokerage account, which is just a basic investing account. Think about how your savings account is taxed on the dividends that you earn. You get that tax form if your dividends are over $10, I believe. A taxable brokerage account is the same sort of thing. You're taxed along the way. So you're taxed on dividends as you earn them. You're taxed on gains as you sell them. Of course, you're never taxed on the money that you actually put into the account. That's what's called your basis. And that money can always be taken back out without any sort of taxes. It's always the gain that is taxed. And of course, there's potential for tax loss harvesting if your investments go down. But we're not going to get into that in this conversation. Now, another account that Marcus could use to invest is an HSA. And I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail on the HSA, but they are possible to be invested through a place like Fidelity. So no matter which account type you choose, Marcus, you're going to have to choose a company to open that account with. I like Fidelity, but there are plenty of other ones out there. But no matter what, stay away from any app that promotes trading. You are not trying to trade. You are trying to invest. You are trying to invest in index funds, not trade to get rich. Trading is where investing starts to look a lot more like gambling, in my opinion. And to be honest, I wouldn't even call trading investing. It's something very different in my book. But I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'm glad we were able to have two guests on this one episode again. So consider this a buy one, get one free, even though this podcast is free. So just consider it a two for free. These conversations are so much fun when we get to go back and forth and go around with multiple guests. So let me know what your thoughts are about having the money talking points at the beginning. I'm going to do it on a couple more episodes in the future. So let me know. And if we need to adjust it, we certainly can. I think that it was great. I really liked it. And I think it's something that's going to stick around for a while. So let me know what you think. What a fantastic money talk that we just had with Steve and Mark. We flipped the script on traditional budgeting with their 50-20-30 approach, basically telling your wants to wait in line behind your savings. The secret sauce, though, could be automation and starting very small. Even a $5 subscription you forget to cancel could become $4,000 over 20 years if you were to redirect that to some basic, simple investing. And the biggest myth that we busted today, we busted that investing is gambling. When you buy the S&P 500 index fund, you're not rolling the dice. You're becoming a tiny owner of Apple, Google, Amazon, all these big companies. And sure, it might feel scary at first, but Steve and Mark proved that you don't need to save $1 million to have $1 million. Time and compound growth will do most of the heavy lifting while you sit back and enjoy the coffee that you budgeted for with your 30% of your fund money. I wanted to share another quick way to get in touch with me. You've heard me mention it throughout the episode, but comments on Spotify. This is a feature that I'd like to start using a whole lot more. I know there's a good amount of you listening out there on Spotify, so head back into the app right now and leave me a comment on this episode as to what you thought about the episode. But thank you for listening. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the podcast and sign up for my email list. Head over to moneytalk.show and submit your name and email right there on the homepage. You can also use the contact page on my website to send me any questions you might have. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting or financial coaching, I'm a partner with My Budget Coach, which is a platform that allows you to connect your budget directly with me, your financial coach. And if you have any questions, you can always schedule a free consultation in the show notes at any time. And I'd love to help you get started with your budgeting and figuring out how to make your money work for you. Remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.